The National Archives podcast series, The Olympic Record, presented by Sarah Hutton.
The Olympic Record is a selection of hundreds of historic documents and images relating to the Olympic and Paralympic Games, which have been made available online by the National Archives for the first time. You can download them for free at www.nationalarchives.gov.uk/Olympics. This dedicated online resource provides you with free access to more than 180 records and 60 pictures at the touch of a button. At the heart of the resource is an interactive timeline feature, giving you the opportunity to track backwards through time and read documents which reveal the impact the Olympic movement has had on our history in the 116 years since the modern games were revived. From a brief dispatch in 1896 to the huge online presence today, the records reflect the growth of the games throughout the 20th century, as well as its remarkable survival through two world wars, political turmoil and boycotts. Let's have a look at some of the highlights which are revealed. The first stop on our timeline is at the first modern Olympics. Held in Athens, the home of the ancient Olympics in 1896, it was host to 14 competing nations. Digitised documents from our collection include a dispatch dated the 14th of April 1896, in which the British ambassador to Athens wrote that the Olympic Games had been a great success, despite bad weather, which forced the cancellation of the naval regatta. He reported that the Americans were the only good team of athletes and they won the majority of prizes for which they contested. He also praised the management of the Games and concluded that they had served to show the Greeks in the best possible light as competitors, spectators, organisers and hosts. The modern Games had been successfully launched. However, for Greece, it was to be another 108 years before they hosted the Games again in 2004. As we move forward to the end of the 19th century, we arrive at London's first experience as the host city. The fourth Olympic Games of 1908 were due to be held in Rome, but the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in 1906 saw Italy's resources being quickly directed to the rebuilding of Naples and meant that London, when she stepped in as the new host, had less than 2 years to prepare. A highlight of the first London Games was the marathon race. The Daily Mail reported that it would be the greatest long-distance race ever held, exciting enormous interest all over the world. 2,000 policemen were required to preserve order, prevent obstruction, and regulate traffic. A sketch shows the official route from Windsor to the stadium at White City, and is the first time the standard marathon length we are familiar with today was utilised, as the athletes were to take in the royal box in addition to the 26 miles. A warm, sunny day and the crucial extra 385 yards that had been added to the race made for a dramatic finale, with the Italian runner Durando Pietri disqualified for being helped across the finishing line after collapsing near the end. Let's fast forward through time once more to 1936 and the Games in Berlin. For those who witnessed the Olympic Games of 1896 and 1908, the world must have seemed a transformed place. Berlin had once before been selected as host in 1916, but of course, under the shadow of nations being shattered apart during the First World War, the Games had been cancelled. In 1936, Berlin had once more been selected as host, but this decision had been made prior to the ominous rise of Nazi power, and the world now watched uncomfortably the launch of a huge propaganda machine. A German press article sent to the Foreign Office spoke of its people being deeply imbued with the Olympic idea, declaring that the world shall judge from the sincerity of their hospitality their will to friendship with all nations. The same article notes that the Olympic flame will enter Berlin just 22 years to the day since the war flame of 1914, something the writer considered a good omen. Several nations threatened to boycott the Games altogether. There was concern at the Foreign Office over the Prime Minister's attendance at an Olympic dinner, and the British Embassy in Berlin reported that the press could not be allowed to breathe a hint of this sporting storm in a teacup after the American team refused to give the Olympic salute on the ground that it was the same as the Hitler salute. This 11th Olympiad, far now from its beginnings, was characterised by a tense and troubled atmosphere. The end of the subsequent Second World War saw London again in the position of hosting the Games, and again the event was marked with challenges. In 1948, just 3 years after the end of the war, resources were scarce, bombed-out buildings were still being rebuilt, and the population was still living under rationing. The Games were run on a tiny budget, with competing countries even forced to bring their own sports equipment and food, and athletes were housed in temporary accommodation in schools and parks. The austerity Olympics showed the continuation of Britain's make-do-amend mentality from the war years and provided a morale-boosting antidote to the previous Games in Berlin. With the arrival of so many representatives from different countries, officials showed a keenness to extend welcome and hospitality, although foreign customs and diets still attracted curiosity, with investigations into the links between diet and sporting performances of different nationalities. One document calls for concessions to be shown to our European neighbours, such as France and Spain, when it came to bringing wine into the country. As the writer rather delightfully explains, the point is, of course, that for such competitors, wine is part of their normal diet, and in their view, at any rate, is a foodstuff. It was another 64 years before the Games would return to this country, but in this time, several bids were submitted. London's Docklands, for example, could have looked very different if a Greater London Council plan to host the Olympic Games there had come to fruition. The idea of building Olympic facilities in London's rundown Docklands area was first proposed by Councillor Roland Freeman for the 1984 Games. The 1984 Games, in fact, went to Los Angeles, but the idea was revived with the 1988 Games in mind. In 1979, the GLC commissioned a feasibility study to explore the idea of building a new 70,000-seat national stadium on Royal Victoria Dock. Interestingly, a national lottery was one of the ideas suggested to help fund the Games. However, concerns about cost and the lack of enthusiasm from the new government meant the idea never got off the ground. A note from Michael Heseltine to Mrs. Thatcher suggested the bid would make no sense given the government's economic objectives. In contrast, Manchester's bid for the 2000 Olympic Games received the wholehearted backing of the government of the day. It committed £53 million for the provision of facilities in advance of the nomination and a further £2 million to support the bid itself. One document details the Central Office of Information's efforts to publicise and support the bid in conjunction with the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. It was thought necessary to scotch the myth of Manchester weather by using flattering shots of the city taken on a clear day. Members of the cast of Coronation Street were also enlisted to fly the flag for the bid by wearing red and blue ties. Early memos show a considerable degree of optimism surrounding the bid, and the Prime Minister, John Major, personally lobbied the President of the International Olympic Committee, Juan Antonio Samaranch. However, it was Sydney which eventually won the bid, while Manchester hosted the 2002 Commonwealth Games. 12 years later, we arrive at the present day, London 2012, the third time the capital will host the Olympic Games. Apart from the historical timeline we have just had a taste of, the Olympic record also provides a gateway to the hundreds of different sporting and cultural activities happening across the country this Olympic summer, from celebrations at national and regional venues to local school and community projects. The National Archives has taken the lead in working with central and local government, as well as sporting, cultural, media and heritage organisations, to ensure records relating to London 2012 are preserved for future generations.
This podcast was recorded on the 1st of May 2012 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.